Hello, I'm FreePod host Alan Wenzel, and I'm pleased to host this week's in-depth interview with Wayne Duckman, who is the Community and Economic Development Director for the City of Freeport. Wayne, welcome to the interview. I'm glad you're able to spend some time with us this morning.
Hey, hi, Alan. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here and honored you invited me. So thank you, and I look forward to talking with you today.
Well, our topic today, Wayne, is abandoned buildings. And that's what I'd like to focus on in our 15 minutes or so that we have together, and just gather some information from you about how the city addresses the issue of abandoned buildings around town. But I want to start with this. It may be kind of a silly question, but to me it's logical. What exactly constitutes an abandoned building? How is that defined?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, basically it is what it sounds like, correct? So it's a vacant, we have a vacant property designation, and then we also require to register your property as vacant. But more importantly, I think what comes down to is eventually those vacant buildings end up being condemned, and that's where the city really starts moving forward with you know, remediation efforts. But the answer to your question simply is, how do you determine if a building's vacant? Well, our inspectors are out throughout the city, and oftentimes they'll see something as simple as a yard not being mowed, and then they'll notice, okay, the city will issue the violations, see no response from the property owner that's listed as the property owner. And then what will happen is then, you know, they mow it, let's say the one time, and then the next time they notice the grass isn't still growing, they don't see activity in the house. And that's when they will, you know, will check resources such as water bills, and taxes being paid, just general ideas, you know, looking around, seeing that the building's vacant, and then we'll issue a citation to the listed property owner saying, the city, you need to register your property as vacant. So okay. That's kind of the nuts and bolts of how do we determine that a building is vacant. Several resources, there's ways to get there, but it does have an inspection. It does have a part where we do contact the property owners, issuing a citation saying, you know, qualify your property as vacant, register as vacant.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how many properties in Freeport might be classified as abandoned or could be once the inspection and notification process is completed?
Sure. So I'll call it vacant and condemned is probably, I believe the number is around 300, but I could confirm that with you later on, but it's quite a few. It's at least, I know we're looking through it now and we're looking at in the chronic nuisance process, which is centered around condemned properties. We're right now processing 40 through that process. Okay. But I think that Potentially, you know, when we're looking at vacant and properties that could lead to that immediate action, I think there's at least 300 that are going down that road of where we're taking immediate action. But there's at least 40 properties right now we're in the middle of immediate action on with vacant as a vacant status.
Do you have any idea, Wayne, if that's kind of normal for a city our size? What kind of comparisons would we make to other cities of 25,000? Is that about what other cities experience? Are we more than usual or less, or it's hard to tell?
Well, I certainly will tell you that we are not in a good position in terms of vacant and condemned houses. And it's not something that happens overnight. That is an issue that Freeport struggles with. Specifically for a town its size. You know, I would say Rockford has had issues, but they're larger. Peoria has had issues with this. They're larger. And essentially, I've worked with other resources. A good friend of mine in McHenry County, a zoning board member I worked with for years. You know, he worked in economic development in Harvard. He told me, he said, one of the biggest issues that the state of Illinois deals with is in former industrial cities that are not within the 50-mile radius of the city of Chicago, collar counties, when they've lost their industrial strength, you know, their economic development anchors, that they struggle immensely with urban blight. And so I think that's what we're seeing here in, we're seeing this in Freeport. Mm-hmm. So that's clearly what we have here.
So it is kind of typical for a former industrial city, but a city that was certainly built on industry. When that declines, the housing issue tends to come along with it. And whether you call it blight or abandoned buildings, it seems to be part of that, that evolution of how cities go after that happens.
Unfortunately, in Illinois, that is something that's correct. While I can't make the comparison to a similar size, meaning, you know, population. Mm-hmm. However, I would say as an former industrial city, still an industrial city, but, you know, manufacturing in Illinois, industry in Illinois, in these cities, as those jobs leave these cities, the housing falls right in line with it. And other cities in Illinois are certainly struggling with that.
Do our abandoned properties fall in any particular area of the city? Are they spread out throughout the city of Freeport? Are there any concentrations that you focus on?
Well, I will tell you that the city itself struggles with abandoned properties. Okay. So I wish there was no areas that had to deal with this problem.
Sure.
But certainly I can tell you this is struggle where the city is struggling with this in every neighborhood, every ward. It is everywhere. And I receive calls, and work with the public in every neighborhood of this city to some extent on a house or houses that, and properties that need to be addressed. It's a city problem.
You mentioned a little bit earlier the process you go through in trying to determine if a building is abandoned in terms of inspection and notification. What additional steps need to be taken to get to the point of actually demolitioning the building?
Well, I want to say right up front that, you know, I know some neighbors oftentimes when they're there, they just want the building torn down. And, you know, when a building is torn down by a city, it is the ultimate failure of a system in generally. And it goes back to, you know, losing economy, losing the jobs, and then the people living in those houses leave. And then there's nobody immediately to fill those houses because there's a lack of work and lack of employment. And then what ends up happening is the houses sit vacant for a while. They're not being, you know, there's no economy to support a person living there and fixing the home. And then the houses sit, they're not being repaired. The city starts issuing violations, but the people eventually, again, as we're talking about vacant, abandoned properties, they are abandoned. And eventually what happens is the city has to issue enough violations with no response. And to get a little bit more specific into that, we have a code of ordinances, we issue violations. Every person has, you know, due process in this country, as we know. The property owners have a chance to, you know, defend themselves. But if they are in our administrative hearing process, if they receive 3 violations in a 6-month period, they're put into what is known as a chronic nuisance, meaning they're a chronic problem on top of being vacant, on top of being condemned. And typically 30 days into a chronic nuisance is when we start going through a statutory known as a fast track demolition, where a property owner then will receive 30 days to move forward or the city will demolish their property. All that being said is, it's a global problem that you touched on earlier with the city, and that the city is then left to use resources. Its general fund comes from property taxes. And then now we are demolishing properties with property taxes that will not have property taxes coming forward because they turn into city lots that need to be mowed. So you can see how this problem keeps, it's exponentially getting worse.
And so there's some real downsides to getting to that point where we have to demolish a building. It's harmful to the city in terms of taxable property and in terms of a strain on resources for the city. And you're losing a house that potentially could be a residence for someone, housing, if it were in the condition necessary for someone to move in.
It is a difficult situation. It is always difficult for me in my heart, essentially because I know that I am doing the right thing right now in removing a blighted property, because blighted properties, we know, lower property values. We know they are, there's a correlation through academic research and practical research that, hey, you know, these lead to higher crime areas. They lower property values. It furthers the immediate issue. So immediately I do have satisfaction in that I can remove the building. But I know for the long run, those are potential homes for people. These are potential, you know, this is revenue loss for the city. And if eventually we do need, and what the city in my position, eventually I am trying to turn the tide into bringing homes back to these empty lots, bringing revenue back to the city. I don't, right now it's okay to be demolishing. If, it solves the immediate problem, but long term, we need mm-hmm. to find a way to do mm-hmm. something with these properties.
Mm-hmm. Can you link the issue of affordable housing to what you just said, Wayne? Are we in need of more affordable housing? I assume that we are. Most communities are. But that certainly would impact affordable housing if we can't replace those vacant lots with some kind of living accommodations for citizens.
Yes. So, I mean, certainly the city right now is working with a few developers on options, to bring some affordable housing into the neighborhoods where we have mm-hmm. vacant lots. You know, we are working on it with certain developers. But I will tell you that, you know, if you look it up online or if you do some research, they tell you, you know, the average price to build is $150 a square foot in Illinois. I would say it's closer to $300 a square foot. So wow. think about that. And the $300 a square foot in my eyes and from what my practical research will tell you is based on the fact that once you receive a vacant lot, you have to dig the utilities, water, sewer, and electric. Electric's overhead, but you have to bring those utilities to the site. From the street or from the right of way. And then you have to dig a foundation mm-hmm. that has a cost associated with it. Then you have to build the house. And then you also have to think about a profit being in it for the contractor. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. one of the areas of research I've looked at in my academic career and talked about quite a bit is the rising cost of construction furthers the blight remediation issue. Oh, so if you think about this, if you go to the city of Chicago, or any of the collar counties and suburbs, it really doesn't matter if you're paying $300 a square foot when, you know, if that's $2,000 house costs $600,000. And if you're in a nice suburb, they can sell that house for $1.2 million.
Sure.
That doesn't affect the rising cost of construction, does not affect wealthier areas. Cities that are dealing with blight, if it costs $300,000, heck, if it costs $160,000 to build a house in Freeport with the rising costs of labor, it is hard to incentivize private mm-hmm. industries to come here and build. Now, all that being said, not painting a doom and gloom picture here, we are working with developers on alternative solutions on, hey, what can we do to bring some housing back here? But also remember that there is an economic development portion involved with this, in that if we could find some sort of solution to bring businesses here that would incentivize people that would say, hey, now I have to live here because my company, mm-hmm. my organization opened a business here and now I need a place to live here. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, why do people live in certain areas that they live in? Well, that's where my job is. And even with remote work, there's still an association with I moved to where my work is. So all of these factors, I would say economic development, cost of construction, are all the global factors that are leading to our urban blight issue. So we are working on them, you know, concurrently at the same time. And then immediately, the immediate concept or strategy that we're working on is isolating. We know we have blighted properties. We need to remove them. But long term, we're looking at that economic mm-hmm. development and then also the affordable housing. How do we come up with solutions? Because we're not a collar county of Chicago.
Right.
We can't afford to just say, well, it costs $300 a square foot and a developer is going to do it. It's not going to happen in Freeport. We have to start looking at alternative solutions for housing.
Mm-hmm. And if you ignore the economic development component, we're going nowhere then in terms of trying to bring housing back for the city and cure these blighted areas.
Well, let's think about that. I mean, if you're talking about a 10% population loss since the 2010 census, that's a big deal. That's 2,000 people. You know, I believe it was right around 27,000. And I think now we're around 24,000. So it's almost 3,000 people. It's right around a 10 to 11% population loss in 10 years. There are several reasons. Some of it is, yes, where, you know, the neighborhoods are deteriorating and it's blighted, but certainly some of it is you're seeing companies moving out of town.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Why are you going to, you know, are you going to continue to live somewhere when your employment has left? No. So we really do need to keep our eyes on all of these factors to hopefully turn the tide. So blight remediation and demolition is the short-term solution to help stop this downward spiral of property values. But ultimately we have to keep focusing on alternative construction solutions, which I've worked with Region 1 Planning Council in Rockford. I've worked with other, you know, talked with other communities in Rockford, the city of Rockford, as well as it's doing with its property values, which is one of the hottest real estate markets in the country right now.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's articles talking about that. They're increasing, but they're still not high enough to justify the cost of construction. So they've been working with regional planning partners. And I've been at those meetings where they're talking about, hey, what can we do to somehow incentivize at the state level affordable housing in Northwest Illinois communities? Because we are struggling with that gap of economic development and affordable construction prices.
What are some of the creative solutions that are being put on the table as people brainstorm ideas? Can you think of a couple, Wayne, that come to the top for you?
Well, one thing I think that I've kind of just, and again, I met with the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, which is a state agency. And again, I want to tell the public that anybody listening here, these are conversations being brought up at the table. Certainly doesn't mean that we may not see a solution to this for multiple years down the road.
Right.
But the conversations, items that I have brought up to representatives at the state and also in conjunction with other members, like I said, the Region 1 Planning Council at these state level meetings, I've said, you know, what the state could probably help with is, you know, if we're looking at what's known as a greenfield or even a brownfield redevelopment project, you know, the state is going to probably is going to balk at saying, okay, we're going to give money to just a pure developer so that they could put houses. They may have some issues just subsidizing the pure construction costs. But one thing they can certainly help with is, you know, we know we have a housing need and we would like to maybe have the state help with the costs of running utilities to the site, the cost of the city streets that are going to be necessary to, you know, hey, we're redeveloping 5 houses on this block, or we're going to put in a 100 house subdivision. The margins are tight for this developer, but if the state could help fund the streets, the utilities, that takes that $300 a square foot price and cuts that margin to maybe $250. And then now you're looking at a margin that a private developer is going to be incentivized to want to do.
Makes it doable for them.
It makes it doable. So we're looking at the state level and we're not saying, hey, you have to do this. You know, you have to fund our housing. You know, that doesn't really work. You have to find a way to, because that's also state tax dollars. That means our downstate tax buyers are helping, you know, cities, and it all has to kind of work. But so when we can kind of, when we can tie that, you know, that aid for a housing into utilities and roads, it's something that, you know, it's something that could be promising with the state level and maybe help us with our housing issue.
It's sometimes hard at the state level or to convince people in other parts of the state that when one area of the state prospers, ultimately we all do, because it helps, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. Yes. Sometimes it's hard to convince people of that, but, you know, improved properties means increased tax revenue for the state or for a locality, less reliance maybe on some other kinds of tax dollars.
Yes.
But it's hard for people to see that overall vision sometimes.
Well, I think what, you know, when you're looking at the Northwest Illinois region and that, you know, obviously Rockford's our, you know, bigger cousin to east of us. But we are part of the Northwest Illinois region. And when, and then you can even go back down to Peoria. That's another, they're Southern, we're more Central Illinois. But the idea I'm getting at here is we are industrial centers that are not linked directly to Chicago economic wise. We're not a collar county of Chicago. We cannot rely on that industrial sector for employment. So we need in ways to have industrial centers here to support our people and ultimately our housing. So I think when we're looking at the state level, I think that's where we can petition to, or we can kind of say, hey, look, anybody not tied to the collar counties of Chicago are struggling as communities. And how can we as a state help bring some of these businesses back? And I know there's people, excuse me, throughout the state that truly are interested in that effort.
Let me ask you about a specific building that comes to mind every time I drive in from Rockford on the east side of town, the old Holiday Inn. Can you tell us anything about what's happening with that building?
Well, and I think, you know, you speak of Rockford, they've certainly had their similar issues, you know, that come to mind where you have a property and I can't think of the name of the theater right now, but they have a theater and I've researched it.
Is that the old Midway Theater?
Yes, I believe downtown? It's the Midway Theater downtown.
I saw Jaws in that theater back in 1975.
Good movie. And unfortunately, it's probably sad when you see that theater. But you know, what's happened with the Holiday Inn and very similar to the Midway Theater in Rockford. And again, I keep when you're in my industry, you want to keep eyes and track on what other communities are doing. Unfortunately, I just want to say this. Oftentimes people will say, well, we're not Rockford. We're not Chicago. We're not this. And it's like, I get that. But understand, I'm looking for how are other communities handling similar situations. I'm not trying to just copy what they're doing. I'm looking to see what works, what doesn't work, and what are some of their struggles and how that can be applicable to the city of Freeport. So looking at Midway Theater, here's an issue we know that they've had over there. They've had legal struggles with an absentee owner who has enough financial backing to fight in court any action the city is taking towards any type of remediation efforts. Remember, there's a difference. Statutes are more lenient for abandoned residential structures less than three stories as opposed to industrial manufacturing type buildings. Okay. So state law,
a different set of rules.
There's a different set of rules. Mm-hmm. So people say, well, if there's an abandoned house, the city will put up an orange placard, which is a part of the process for a fast track demolition. That's fairly quick towards demolition. But once you're talking about a hotel, you're talking about a theater, the state law does not provide municipalities with that power.
Oh, okay.
So let's go back and kind of look at that. What's going on with the Holiday Inn? Well, we know it's not a residential structure. It's an industrial structure. What I can say is that the city has a large amount of administrative at our city level, a large amount of fines. The property is in chronic nuisance. Now we are working towards other measures to help in the remediation process, but that's an ongoing potential litigation issue. So, you know, I cannot dive into all the details, but what I can say is that the city staff has spent a large amount of resources securing the building, cutting the grass when we have to, issuing fines and violations. And we've moved this process up to where it is now. The property is in chronic nuisance, which means it is acquiring $100 a day fines.
Wow.
And we are moving towards further action. But I do like to set realistic expectations with our community in that, you know, look towards other situations where if a private owner who's an absentee owner gets a hold of a business property, an industrial property, it can be detrimental for a city because they will hold on to that and fight cities just to hold on to these properties. And it really hurts the community. So I do, I want the public to know myself and my team are working.
You're doing all you can
as hard as we can to make this to fix this issue for the city. It just takes time.
So stay tuned is about all we can say.
Stay
at this
tuned.
Point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wayne, I really appreciate your time with me this morning in talking about abandoned and blighted properties. I'd like to close the interview with a question for you. How can citizens of Freeport help you, help the city in what it is that you do, not only in terms of handling these properties, but even in terms of economic development? What's our role as citizens?
I want to let everybody know this, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I say this all the time, and I want people to know it's a genuine something I would say to anybody. And I mean it from the bottom of my heart. If you see something, say something. If you see something, say something. And if it seems like a staff member is frustrated, or if a staff member, or if you don't get a hold of somebody right away, you know, we do have a front desk. Call it, report it. And know that if somebody's frustrated at the city, we're probably frustrated too, because we are working hard to take care of these buildings as efficiently as possible. So the number one piece of advice I can say is if you see something, say something, don't ignore it. It's important to me. It's important to the city. It's important to my staff. I also want to say that on that same line, when a property owner has an administrative hearing, in which basically means they've been issued, like you saw something, you saw a broken window, you reported it. Inspector came out, issued a ticket. Here's the thing. When you see it, go to the hearing, you know, go to the hearing and then wait patiently and tell the administrative hearing officer, I have lived next to this building with a broken window for a year. There are cats running in and out of it. There's raccoons. There's criminal activity. There's whatever you see, be honest, be respectful, and tell, you know, be kind and courteous and professional, but let our hearing officer know what they see so that we can hopefully come to a quicker resolution. And that's my advice, is be part of the, be a positive professional part of the solution, and know that no matter what, the city, myself and my staff care immensely about resolving these issues, and we want to resolve them.
Wayne, good advice for all of us. You see something, say something, and guys, go to the administrative hearings and share what you've observed and your experiences. That will help a lot. Help you do your job and help the city do its job in trying to deal with this issue. Wayne, I want to thank you for your time this morning. It's been a pleasure meeting you and talking with you. And we'll have to do this again as issues unfold for you. Our FreePod listeners, I know, would enjoy hearing from you again.
Alan, it's been a pleasure. This has been a good experience for me. And again, you know, everybody out there, if you see something, say something. You are a part. Your voice matters. And, you know, we all want to make the city a better place. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And once again, I'm FreePod host Alan Wenzel. I invite you to tune in to our weekly newscast for the local news you've been missing. Those newscasts occur every Thursday beginning at noon. And on Tuesdays at noon, you can listen to our in-depth interviews. As always, we want to remind you that FreePod couldn't come to you without the help of many local supporters. We're especially appreciative for the Mass Communications Department at Highland Community College for producing this podcast, as well as our many liaisons and reporters for the time they volunteer to bring the news to you. Thank you, Highland and Team FreePod, and thank you for listening.